You're listening to Faith Talk 570, 910, and FM 102.1, and streaming live at letstalkfaith.com. My name is Bill Carl, and every year we are part of an event called the Tampa Bay Prayer Brunch, coinciding with the National Day of Prayer. This year's event at Armature Works in Tampa featured guest speaker Phil Cook. In 1991, Phil, along with his wife Kathleen, founded Cook Media Group, producing for Christian ministries like Billy Graham, Joel Osteen, and Joyce Meyer, as well as non-faith-based groups like ESPN, Walt Disney Studios, and Paramount Pictures. Phil's work has aired in over 60 countries. He has a passion for sharing Christ with the world. Here's Phil Cook.
We have a production company my wife Kathleen and I founded in Hollywood back in 1991. We've done movies, television programs, even Super Bowl commercials, but honestly, at heart, I'm a preacher's kid from North Carolina. I grew up in Charlotte. And I always have had a passion for helping the church tell its story in this disrupted culture we live in. It's funny, for me, Christians, we're telling the greatest story ever told, but sometimes we just don't tell it very well. And the truth is, we live in a media-driven culture today. If we don't understand how to tell our story through media, I think we'll lose a generation. Research indicates the average person today sees about 5,000 media messages every day. We're literally being overwhelmed with competing voices and messages out there. In fact, our new phones, that's a big part of it, part of the problem. The average person today checks their phone about 150 times a day. What's horrifying is your middle schooler checks their phone about 85 times a day. So media has become the driving force in our culture. The problem is, I just don't think we're engaging it very well. And there's a huge disconnect out there, I notice, between the way we view ourselves as Christians and the rest of the world views us. Think about it. In our lifetime, most of our lifetimes, people sitting here in this room, think about how things have changed in this culture. When I was a kid, my dad was a pastor, as I said, and he was the most respected guy in town. I mean, people who had never darkened the door of a church still respected my dad. I saw a survey recently that indicated pastors were slightly below unscrupulous used car salesmen in their perception in American culture today. Things have dramatically changed. And how did that happen? I mean, I went to Galatians chapter 5 and I looked at the fruits of the Spirit. You know, what the Bible calls the fruits of the Spirit is actually how we should be known. Love, joy, peace, gentleness, kindness, self-control. That's kind of our brand. And in other words, if we went out and asked people, how should we be viewed as Christians? What do you think of these Christian guys? Hopefully they'd say, oh yeah, those are the people that love. They're gentle. They're kind. They're amazing people. But honestly, if we went out on the streets of Tampa or Atlanta or Dallas or Los Angeles and we interviewed people about, what do you think about Christians? I've discovered more often we'd hear things like hypocritical, phony, judgmental. How did that happen? That's what started me on the journey to writing my book, The Way Back. I decided I'm going to figure out what caused that disconnect. And I thought if people just knew how awesome Christians are, if they knew how great we are, the culture would probably change its perception. So I went to four of the biggest researchers in the country. I went to Pew, Gallup, Lifeway, Barna, and I wanted to study how Christians live our life. Because when you look back at the last 30 or 40 years, something has gone wrong. I thought of when I see changes in the culture, most of us see things going in a bad direction and we kind of get upset, we get angry. I understand that completely, but I've also learned in Hollywood that people don't change because you get mad at them. We thought we'd boycott companies that we don't like. We'd criticize a culture we don't like. Nothing much has changed in the last 30 or 40 years. In fact, one of the major denominations in America, a number of years ago, decided to boycott a big Hollywood studio because they didn't like the movies they were making. So their attitude was, we'll show you. We're just not going to buy your tickets. The problem is, during the 7 years of that boycott, the movie studio's profits went up. They set records. The head of the denomination called me and said, could you arrange a meeting between me and the chairman of the studio because we need to call this off. We're looking like idiots. Remember, a couple years ago, we thought we'd try if you don't say Merry Christmas, if your employees say Happy Holidays, we're not going to buy your stuff. Well, that didn't go over very well, did it? I really look back at the last 30 or 40 years of what I call these anger strategies, and have we moved the dial in a positive direction at all in any social issue? I don't think so. So I thought, Let's go back and look at this. So I got these researchers together, and I decided to see how Christians are living their life. Here's what I found out. It's interesting that in this country today, 70 to 79% of people consider themselves Christians. Of course, that doesn't mean they're serious. That doesn't mean they show up at church on Sunday. But I didn't want those guys. I wanted the people who are really serious. I wanted to look at the way really serious church-going Christians are living their life. I thought, if I could show the world how great we are, that's going to change things. I picked four areas: prayer, church attendance, Bible reading, and giving. Now, those things, you know, they don't make you a Christian, but chances are, if you're a serious Christian, you're going to do that stuff regularly, right? I didn't pick hard stuff like fasting or mission trips. I just picked basic, you know, baseline stuff. Let me tell you what I found out. When I looked at the research the best companies in America had come up with, here's what I discovered. And these are church-going, serious believers. Here's what I found out. When it comes to prayer, I discovered that 63% of serious church-going Christians believe prayer is important. And I thought, oh, that's pretty good. That's the majority. That's great. But then I realized, wait, the flip side of that means 37% of people in the pews today, more than a third of serious church-going Christians, don't believe prayer is important. And I checked church going. I checked church attendance. I discovered the bar is so low today that if you show up just 18 times a year, you're now considered a regular. Some of you older members of the audience, remember perfect attendance pins? When I was a kid, I got them year after year after year. They don't even give those out anymore. Because if you just show up 3 out of 8 Sundays, you're good. Pastors are thrilled that you show up that much. It's remarkable how low that bar has become. Bible reading was a wake-up call. When we looked at Bible reading, we discovered some interesting things. We found out that only 19% of serious church-going Christians read the Bible once a day. We found out 25% of Christians read the Bible 2, maybe 3 times a week. Most of those were in church on Sunday. What was horrifying is we discovered 40%, nearly half of serious church-going Christians read the Bible once a month, rarely, or never. Now, just think about this for a minute. This is the book God gave us that outlines our eternal destiny, where we came from, where we're going, how to have a relationship with the God of the universe, and we think so little of it that almost half of us read it rarely or never. Would you go to a doctor that never read the manuals, the medical journals? Would you fly in an airplane where the mechanics never read their books? And yet, we think so little of the Bible that half of us read it rarely or never. And then, of course, I went to giving, and you know that's going to be brutal. Sure, we discovered that less than 10% of church-going Christians today actually give 10% to the work of God. So when you look at those numbers, here's what I discovered. We're all talk and no action. You know what? We're happy to criticize other people. We're happy to criticize the culture. We're happy to boycott people we don't like. We're happy to launch campaigns against people we don't like, but the truth is, we're not living the life God's called us to live. It's kind of funny. We've, in many ways, become the fat guy in the gym that lectures everybody else about health. You know that guy? I mean, after all, just because you have a gym membership doesn't mean you're in shape. I discovered it's kind of hard to work out, but it's easy to wear yoga pants. And I'm afraid most Christians today are simply wearing yoga pants. The result of this, and it's not pretty, let me just say that. Here's what I discovered. I discovered that the greatest threat to Christianity in America today is not the rise of militant Islam. It's not the rise of secularism. It's not Hollywood or anybody else. The greatest threat to Christianity in America is American Christians, because we're not living the life God called us to live. It made me realize, I'm a marketing guy, I'm a television producer, and I think everything is, you know, the answer to every problem is marketing. You know, your house is too small, fine, call it cozy. You know, we can come up with a marketing solution for everything. Nobody shows up at your restaurant, great, call it exclusive, you know. But the truth is, Christianity doesn't have a marketing problem, we have a sales force problem. We don't believe in the product. It'd be like going to a meeting over at the offices at Coke. Everybody that's over there is drinking Pepsi. What would you think? What would you think? So what do we do? How do we fix it? Here's what I, I thought about doing. We decided to look back in history and see if there was ever a time when the church as a whole was dramatically impacting culture in big ways. And we had to go all the way back to the days of the early church. Ancient Rome, the first generation of Christians. Now keep in mind, it was illegal to be a Christian at that time. In fact, in most cities in the ancient world, you could kill a Christian on sight and it was perfectly fine. No problem with that at all, because it was illegal. They were hunted down. They couldn't complain. They couldn't boycott anybody. They had no political voice. They had no money. They had no influence. How in the world did they become the dominant religious force in the Western world? I started studying it, and here's what I discovered. Take, for instance, infanticide. Infanticide was a huge problem in the Roman Empire. When children were born, now keep in mind, Roman men owned their wives, they owned their children, and when they had a newborn, if they didn't want it, maybe it was an extra mouth to feed, most often it was a girl, they would take it to the city wall and just leave it on the city wall to die of exposure. Sometimes they would take it to a field outside the city and leave it to be devoured by animals or just die a horrible death by starvation. It was so common in the Roman Empire that today we found a cemetery outside Rome that's populated with newborn girls. It was so common, nobody thought anything about it. But these Christians hated it because they knew every child is born in the image of God. But they couldn't pass a law. They couldn't complain. They had no influence, but they could act. What we discovered is these Christians, what Rome thought were crazy Christians, would go out under cover of night and take in, they'd find these abandoned children, and they'd bring them into their family, and they would raise them as their own. And people in the church community would give money to help pay for that child. Let me tell you something, the Romans had no concept for why anybody would do that. We just abandoned that kid. Why are you taking it in? They were baffled. They were stunned. And there were other things like the plague. When the plague would hit in ancient Rome, the Romans were famous for getting out of town. Let me tell you, they would dump grandma on the way if she started coughing. In fact, one Roman emperor wrote a letter talking about what cowards Romans were. They could not get out of the city fast enough. But Christians would go to ground zero of the plague, minister to people they didn't even know, often at the risk of their own life. Romans could not figure out why anybody would do that. They couldn't figure it out. Time and time again, so many of these things happened that historians today look back and say it caused the Romans completely to rethink who these Christians were and who is this God they serve. It wasn't military power that did it. It wasn't political power that did it. It wasn't complaining. It wasn't boycotting anybody. They just forced the Romans to rethink who they were and who is this God they serve. And within a remarkably short time, the tables were turned and Christianity became the dominant faith in the Western world.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Faith Talk 570 910 FM 102.1. Streaming online at letstalkfaith.com. I'm Bill Carl, and today we're listening to the keynote address given by Phil Cook at this year's National Day of Prayer brunch at Armature Works in Tampa. Phil has produced media across all platforms for numerous ministries, as well as secular clients, including Walt Disney and ESPN. His passion to influence our culture for Christ is contagious. Let's continue now with more from Phil Cook.
So the point of my book is, obviously, so many things haven't worked for us. Getting mad at the culture hasn't worked. You know, trying to get involved in politics and other things, and I'm all for voting and running for office and being involved in government, that's critical. But you know what? You start dragging that into the church, it gets kind of ugly. We tried boycotting. We tried anger strategies. None of that's worked. What are the things we could do today that would so astonish and baffle this culture, it would force them to rethink who we are and who is this God we serve? In the book, and I'd encourage you to get the book. I mean, it's really an interesting look. We look at about 9 or 10 things. We throw out some suggestions, and I encourage you to come up with stuff here in Tampa you could do. For instance, one of the suggestions we came up with is foster care. We discovered there's 350,000 foster care kids in the United States. Talk about an overwhelming problem, but when you look at it, you realize it's a horribly broken system. There are wonderful foster families doing amazing things, but overall, the college rates of kids who come out of foster families are really low, horribly low. And most perpetuate the system generation after generation. In L.A., where I live, it's hard to go a few months without the headlines in the paper being about the corruption or abuse in the foster care system. We thought, 350,000 kids, what do you do? That's the size of a city. But then we realize, wait, there's 300,000 churches in America. What if every church just took one kid? Maybe big churches took a couple. If we got serious about it, we could literally eliminate the need for foster care in a year. Now, before you tell me I'm crazy or that's far-fetched, let me tell you something. Since the book has come out, we've gotten reports from cities across this country. A guy, I spoke at a big conference in Oklahoma City not long ago, and a pastor came up to me and said, I just want to let you know that in our town, 8 churches got together and we eliminated the need for foster care in our city. It's happening across the country. Now, here's the thing. I don't care how much you hate God. I don't care how much you hate church or hate the Christians. How would that impact your viewpoint if suddenly the need for foster care disappeared in this country because of what the church did? And in the book, I talk about some other things. One of the things that my wife thinks is wacky, but I asked the question in the book, why do we cry at funerals? That's always baffled me. I mean, I understand if it's a child or if it's an unexpected death, but what if it's Uncle Roy? Uncle Roy spent his whole life in the church, serious about God. He shared his faith with people. When Uncle Roy dies, he doesn't die. He just crossed over into eternity. He's celebrating. You know what? And yet we show up at church in black clothes. We grieve. We play sad songs. Let me tell you something. Uncle Roy is dancing right now. He's looking at Jesus in the face. And what if we really acted on what we teach? What if we really lived our lives according to what the Bible said? Now think about it for a minute. Maybe Roy, Uncle Roy's got a couple co-workers. You know, he's shared his faith with them for years. He's tried to get them to become Christians. They're not interested. They don't want to go to church. But hey, we better go to Uncle Roy's funeral. We'll go to Roy's funeral. So what happened if they drove into the parking lot and suddenly in the building they hear, I'm talking a rock band going on. What if people were dancing? What if we became the only group of people in this country that threw parties at funerals? How would that change the way people look and what we believe? We're serious about this. It's true. It's absolutely true. I'm just telling you, if we actually live the life God called us to live, I think it would change just about everything that's out there. Let me tell you this. I think this is incredibly important to think about, because I just think it's a strategy we actually haven't tried on a big scale. Let me tell you a quick story and then I'll quit. My wife and I went to London a couple years ago. My wife, Kathleen, is on the National Board of the Salvation Army. She's much smarter, better than me in so many ways. And they asked us, they did a 150th anniversary celebration in London at the O2 Arena, the big giant dome that was built for the Olympics. So they asked us to come and they asked our company to do the media related to the event. So I told my wife, look, that's the same week as our anniversary. So here's the deal. Pack an extra bag, and I'll take you someplace as soon as that's over, because I am an awesome husband. Let's get that clear right now. And so she did. And I kept it a secret. I kept it a secret until, we're leaving. We did the Salvation Army event. We're leaving London. We get to the airport. We get to customs. The lady looks at my wife and says, okay, honey, where are you going? She said, honestly, I don't know. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to be arrested for human trafficking. So I blurted out, Italy, we're going to Italy. So we go to Rome, we fly to Rome, and we have a car pick us up. We go 2 or 3 hours north to the area called Umbria. Some of you have been there. It's called the hill country of Italy. It's the most amazing place. It's a whole series of towns built on the top of hills, fortified medieval towns, and they all have a cathedral or a church. They all have a plaza. They have restaurants. People live there. They're all individual towns. Very few tourists go, and it's a step back into ancient Italy. It's just the most amazing experience. But one place I wanted to go was a particular town that had a church called the Church of St. Augustine. And it fascinated me because it was built in 1300. And yet, even though it was built that long ago, it was all white. Inside the sanctuary, the walls were white, the ceiling was white, everything was white. It looked really modern. It looked like you walked into an IKEA store. It was so incredibly modern. And I thought, I really want to check this out and see, this guy must have been really thinking about the future. What's going on? So we went, walked into the church, and to my shock, it wasn't white at all. There were giant frescoes all over the sanctuary, painted on the walls, huge stylized scenes. And I was shy. It was not what the tour guide said at all. And so about that time, the priest came out, very elderly man. And I said, what's the deal? I showed him the picture from the tour book. I said, this is supposed to be white. He said, well, it used to be. He told me he came to that church as a very young priest more than 50 years ago. And he said, when he came, it was all white. And he said, one day I'm working in my office and there was an earthquake. And terrified, I ran out in the sanctuary to see if there was any damage. And I noticed a big crack on the wall. And I thought, I'll get the ladder and check it out. I put it up against the wall. I climbed to the top of the crack. I thought I'd see how deep it was. So I pulled back some of the plaster. And he said, to my shock, there were two eyes staring back at me. He said, I was so stunned, I fell off the ladder. Yeah, I ran into the city. I ran to the university. I got art curators and museum experts, art historians. And I brought them all out. And he said, what we discovered is, since that time, we've been pulling away the plaster. And what you see now is what we've been discovering. And he said, I did some research, and because it was the frescoes were so strange. For instance, they were very stylized and very strange. One was a woman standing there holding a silver platter with a breast on it. But that's weird. And he said, well, I did some research. And I discovered that was a woman in the early church who the Romans cut her breast off and stood and laughed while she bled to death because she would not turn her back on the gospel. There was another one, an old woman, standing there holding a set of forceps with a giant tooth on the end. What's that? He said, I researched that. I found out that was a 77-year-old woman. The Romans knocked all of her teeth out and then beat her to death because she would not recant her faith in Jesus. And there was another one with a man standing in the middle of a fire. He'd been burned at the stake. And he said, apparently the people that built this church almost 1,000 years ago wanted to be reminded of the heroes of our faith. The people who had lived the life God had called them to live weren't afraid to be a 100% authentic Christian. And they wanted to celebrate that, and they wanted to worship in an atmosphere where those people would be honored. But he said, I also found something else. He said, about 1900, turn of the last century, the worshipers, the members of this church, apparently got uncomfortable with that. Said, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable worshiping with these scenes, these kind of dramatic scenes all over the church. We just don't feel comfortable. That's a little icky. And so they decided to just paint over everything. So they covered the entire church with white plaster and covered it all up. And as he said that, I thought, that's what we've done in the church today. You know what? It's so much easier to criticize people than it is to actually live the life God's called us to live. We've just painted over the hard stuff. You know, I know pastors right now, maybe some in this room, that they won't preach about certain parts of the Bible because they know those angry emails they're going to get after the service. How many times we think, you know, it's best not to share my faith at work or talk to people about Jesus because, I don't know, he may be uncomfortable with that. It'd be awkward. Let me tell you something. I think with all my heart, if we stopped criticizing the culture and started showing the culture what Christians really are and who we are and how we should live, I believe that would start to change Tampa. It would start to change Florida, and it could eventually change the world. Thank you very much for letting me come.
If you've just joined us, you've been listening to the keynote address from the 2019 Tampa Bay Prayer Brunch, May 2nd at Armature Works in Tampa. The keynote speaker has been Phil Cook, owner and co-founder of Cook Media Group. You can connect with him at cookmediagroup.com and connect with us at letstalkfaith.com. If you find yourself in need of strength between Sundays, you can come here for encouragement and great Christian teaching from pastors who are both local and national. Thank you for listening to Faith Talk 570, 910, and online at letstalkfaith.com.